Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the Holtcast. As always, I'm Jack Grimsey, and alongside me today is James Rushton. Welcome back, James.
Thank you very much, Jack. Glad to be back.
Yeah, becoming somewhat regular appearance. Robert had some more actual real life stuff to take care of. So glad you could join us, even though it is almost midnight.
But I've got to join the only positive thing about Aston Villa now that's appearing on these podcasts.
So. Well, one thing's for sure that's somewhat positive about Villa. I mean, maybe too little, too late, but 5 matches unbeaten in all competitions. That's not terrible.
It's amazing, actually. It's a completely different Villa. I mean, too little, too late, as you said, but 5 matches unbeaten still brings a little smile to your face.
Yeah, exactly. And maybe throughout the rest of the season, they can actually play some decent football and at least give us some entertainment. So if you're going to go down, at least go down with a fight and make it enjoyable.
That's all it is, isn't it? I wouldn't be unhappy if we go down now simply because they have tried. Situations prevented them from trying beforehand. There was no game plan. Now it looks like they're set for every match, and that's all I'm happy about is that I've got it together. It's one of those seasons, isn't it, really?
Yeah, imagine I guess what could have been maybe if Remy Gard had a whole preseason at his disposal instead of having to learn everything about the squad in a couple of weeks really on the job. The saying is being a manager is like, and working the transfer market is like flying an airplane while you're trying to build it. I think it's pretty evident what Gard's had to do.
Yeah, I think every manager needs time. It's pretty silly to dismiss our managers quicker than 18 months unless their name's Tim Sherwood. but like, football management is about consistency. It's about having a plan, long-term plan. And Remy Gard has done so well so far for Aston Villa. I mean, he's blew my expectations out of the water. The fact that we're even competing in the Premier League still.
I think you're right. And last week, it wasn't terrible. It was scoreless draw against West Brom. Some days you're going to go out and you're going to play a team that is very, very organized and doesn't really want to do much attacking. But when it doesn't all come off for Villa, then you're going to be stuck scoreless because there's still really a lack of a goal scoring threat in the team.
Yeah. The performance is pretty devalued by the fact it was a terrible match. But Aston Villa really, I thought, having to look back on it, really performed well. They certainly should have lost that match by rights. It was a derby match away, and they're the worst team in the league. So, on paper, they lose it every single time.
Yeah, we haven't won at the Hawthorns in years. I think the last time we won there in the Premier League, Karu, Nick Bonlahor had the goals, and we won 2-1.
Exactly. So, and I have to go on here about Carlos Hill because, man, that guy impressed me so much in that match. Because they did target to give him a kick in. He got stamped on a few times. And, the first couple of times he'd reel in pain and roll on the floor for a bit long. But then after the third one, he just got straight back up, went straight back into the match. And I think he tried his best to show him what he's made of.
Yeah, and really, it wasn't just him. Everybody was... Yeah. Leaving the tackles in. Micah Richards, I think, could have been sent off.
Yeah, Micah Richards. He was very underrated in that match, I thought. Playing at right back for the first time in the Premier League for God knows how long. Yeah, I think he really did give in a good spirited performance. Maybe not as good as the ones we've seen from Bakuna lately. God, he can't cross at all, can he? Every time. Every single time.
Yeah, that's how it's been with Villa, I think, lately is in the past few years.
Yeah.
It's just no end product, but like you said, I can't fault the performance or the effort from the players.
Nah, for me, it's a 10 out of 10 performance. The only thing missing is goals. I did everything except score. That's it. Ashley Westwood played very well. I'm surprised at how well he played. The only probably disappointing one's Libor Kozak. He did make a few intelligent plays, but he just looked run out of the match, completely put out of the match.
Yeah, I think he's still trying to find his feet really again. It was such a long layoff from playing at the top level. It's a totally different game from playing in the reserves.
Yeah, of course. I can't fault him for coming back and You know, he must be so unfit. So unfit after so long out. You know, he needs a good, consistent spell of games to get anywhere near what he should be. And who knows if his, you know, playing style has been affected by that injury. It was a terrible injury. It's easy to forget how bad that injury was.
Yeah, and I know something that some people were mentioning at the pub during the match was the mental side of the game for Kozak as well as the physical. Is you've got to be able to trust your body to go do everything that you needed to do without having to worry about the possibility of re-injuring yourself. And when you've been out for, 18 months, you know?
I mean, he can't chuck himself into every situation like the healthy Rudy Gisted can he? Well, I say healthy, he's out injured now. But, you know, Kozak can't chuck himself into situations like another person could, like Ayu or Gisted, because not just because of his injury, but because it was botched by a doctor and he could potentially have never played again, let alone walk again. But amazing to see him actually on a football field.
Yeah, and like you brought up the Gisted injury, it's, I think we were really unlucky with how he came on and then was injured from a sub perspective. And maybe you could have had Jack Grealish come on, or
as I said, you know, luck doesn't go your way when you're down the bottom of the Premier League, and we've seen that with penalties, so I don't need to talk about it. But especially, you know, with an added injury now, Aston Villa are going to struggle to get a striker in the transfer window, and that's just more bad news on top of a terrible year for bad news for Aston Villa.
You're right, but the thing is, I guess, is maybe Remy could learn a little bit more about the players he has if nobody can come in.
Yeah, he'll certainly have to push some people to the front and maybe put some people who are unfamiliar with a striking position up front. Maybe bring Scott Sinclair back into the fold to play up front permanently if he doesn't get sold, that is. But yeah, it's gonna be interesting to see how ingenuity of our manager can be in the coming games.
Yeah, and even with the lack of a real goal threat, it's still good to see the team not conceding, holding West Brom to a clean sheet, and
of course,
so much improved defensively from Ball under Sherwood.
Under Sherwood, I think we were too hot headed. It's like we wanted to win the match as soon as it started, and when, you know, we pushed too high, left gaps, and teams exploited that easily. Like teams like West Brom would exploit that easily. Heads down, 1-0 loss. We'd never get back into the game. It's nice to see some structure under Remy Gard. He's clearly gone into the players' heads that, you know, a goal lead for the other team doesn't mean the match is over.
Yeah, and a little bit of caution in possession, because when we were making that just those one or two mistakes, it would always result in the other team capitalizing with a goal or two. And you know, when you're struggling up top and the luck's not going your way, you can't afford that.
One thing I've noticed more and more from Aston Villa under Remy Gard is a lack of, you know, last-minute clearances, because it's clear that, you know, when the ball's bouncing around in the box, our players aren't capable of clearing the ball. They have to get it under them. And we've been playing out of defence a lot more recently, and I think that's a result of seeing the panic in the box. He's just clearly told them to calm down, get the ball under your feet and play out, rather than, you know, when you see the ball bounce around Julian Lescott, he can't clear it. But, yeah. Good to see so many improvements.
It just brings me back to that QPR match last year, and Bakuna trying to head it out, and it just all going horribly wrong.
Yeah, that was a great match as well. Yeah. That was a fantastic match.
Entertainment 10 out of 10.
Yeah, 10 out of 10. We haven't had that 10 out of 10 entertainment for a while, actually.
No. I mean, maybe the Leicester match would have been if you were a neutral, but definitely not for Villa supporters.
No, maybe the Crystal Palace one. That was a bit more, I don't know.
Yeah, it was six goals. I mean, Villa have only scored two goals on, what, four occasions this year, and we've lost three of those and drawn the other one.
Yeah, I feel sorry for the amount of people who put in the betting slip asking Villa to win three goals or more, because it's never going to happen.
Yeah. You got to know by now. This team just is incapable of scoring.
Crazy, man. Crazy.
Yeah, I guess final thoughts on the match. Bun obviously was good enough to keep West Brom out, and but we ultimately needed a win and didn't come away with it. So,
yeah. One,
I don't know if they're still putting nails into the coffin, but we have to be going down for sure at this point.
I think the funeral was already a few weeks ago, to be honest. But, yeah, I mean, as I said, I feel like I've accepted relegation now. It's just come calmly, almost like one of the stages of grief. I was so angry about it a few weeks ago, and now I've accepted it, I think. And just got to move on and hope for the best. And maybe if we do stay, that's just a bonus now, isn't it?
Yeah, just totally unexpected. Like you said, you can only be angry about something for so long when you just get to the point where you don't care.
All you have to do is look at the Premier League table, and you look at everything, and there's no team that deserves to be bottom than Aston Villa, and yeah, Aston Villa are clearly the worst football team. Well, were the worst football team. They're suffering for the past mistakes of the season, the half of the season last year, and they've really suffered for them. Because there's no way this team would be going down playing as they are now if they've done that the whole year. No. 16th, maybe. I'm not going down.
Yeah, really definitely. We're going to get to the... I guess we may as well get to the transfer window now. Like we were saying, with the lack of striking options, you'd like to bring in another striker, but Villa probably won't be able to get one. And even if they could get a world-class striker, it wouldn't matter.
Christian Benteke wouldn't save this team, and he's the only... He's the highest option we have possibly available to us. Not that it will happen, but clearly it's the only semi-realistic option of anyone good coming anywhere near Aston Villa Football Club.
Yeah, and Loic Remy probably going to go back to Newcastle.
Yeah,
maybe that can help them. He could have helped Villa if we just had a few more points coming into January. It would have been worth it to make some moves.
Yeah. It is annoying, because I'm not saying that Aston Villa should chuck money at the problem, but they clearly need to invest in a few key individuals who are not necessarily world-class players, but people they can pick up. Not even bargains, just people that they want to be in their football team and make offers for these, to bed them in for when we are relegated. And, you know, it's not just a whole, you know, rebuilding summer again.
Yeah, I think it was just annoying to see Charlie Austin go to Southampton.
Yeah.
I mean, it was 4 million, but he's on 100K a week. And it's just annoying because Villa could have signed him in the summer, maybe, and also Adebayor going to Palace, because, you know, who knows? Maybe he could have helped if you'd gone for him in the summer.
I mean, Charlie Austin deserves every penny of that 100K a week. Dude just scores goals. He's not even an extremely good footballer. He's just got a knack for scoring goals. It's a shame, because you look... Rudy just said it's come on a lot since we last spoke on the podcast. He's actually looked like someone who can perform in our team. But you look at what he's been paid, probably around £30,000, and the transfer fee we paid. I mean, we could have afforded Charlie Austin. We could have spent that as 12 million. That's just two Rudy just said. And
yeah, exactly. I think we could have afforded to spend 30 million more last summer if that would have kept us up.
Yeah,
you can find that in the TV money in the next year.
Yeah, exactly. And no, there's no words that can describe. I wouldn't say it's a failure, but everything did go wrong in that transfer window. We came out with some amazing players, but it wasn't enough, was it? There are no words to describe how the club has been run. And not by Tom Fox or Steve Hollis. They've barely had a chance to do anything, but trying to inject a plan that should have taken 5 or 10 years into 3 months of a summer is never going to work.
No. You can't make wholesale changes that quickly, and that's what needed to be done, because the spine of the squad really had gone. Benteke, Delph, even Ron Vlaar.
But going back to this transfer window, I'm surprised that it's actually nothing of note has happened.
Literally nothing.
But we heard about the Debussy and Kalinic links for weeks, months before this transfer window's open, and that's still the only ones. Who do you see Aston Villa actually getting?
I don't know.
Like,
I think Kalinic seemed a real possibility until the FA.
Do not get me started on that word. Fucking hell.
Just decided that he couldn't contribute anything to England because Aston Villa aren't in top six, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, if we chucked 10 million and 75 grand a week at him, he'd have played two matches already. It is disgusting. There are, like our transfer window, there are no words to describe how ridiculous it is. If the excuse is that he gives English players a chance, then we should just buy loads of EU players who don't need a work permit. It is the fact that money is more of a factor in getting a work permit than performances just tells you everything you need to know about that.
Yeah, and it's incredibly stupid that matches played for the national team is a factor in that, especially as a goalkeeper.
Exactly. Like, how are you meant to develop young players? You know, potentially ones who would become English citizens and be able to play for the English national team. No. Bringing people in like 16, 18, 17, being there for 5 years, getting the English passport and playing for the national team. You know, developing people. It is... I'm not sure how to describe the stupidity of it all. Clearly, there does need to be a regulation on players coming from outside the EU because that's the rules. You know, you need a work permit. But the way the system is just broken, 100%, utterly broken.
Yeah, so, I mean, I don't know if we're going to actually see any players come in. That would, coming into January, even though I figured we were down, I definitely thought that at least two or three players would be coming in. Players that Remy would want for the championship, maybe, or could see something out of this year.
Yeah. I mean, Villa's scouting team got a hell of a job now to try and recruit anyone of value inside the EU that Remy wants, because you know, having a major target shot down on that would surely be a knock to their confidence. And they must have thought that he'd get a work permit. There's no way they'd have made a bid if they didn't think it was possible.
Yeah, because now look, all the other teams know about him, basically, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, if there is a team out there that wants him, that is willing to... I would say it's cheating as well to get around by offering more money than he's actually worth. It inflates the market. Yeah, that's not good for... I'm not an economist, but surely offering false values of like money for someone just to, on the off chance that you get them, it just ruins the value of players.
Yeah, even more so than what's already happening.
Yeah, and what happens to English players' value now? Does that just skyrocket?
Well, yeah.
You know, oh, it's not even worth... Actually, before we came on, it was revealed in the Telegraph that Aston Villa are appealing again in a rare circumstance where someone's actually went to the FA. This is really unfair. So... Yeah.
We did manage to get rid of a player, though, today. It was announced that Philippe Senderos' contract was terminated. They agreed, the player and the club agreed to mutual termination. It looked for a while like we were going to actually get some club to pay for him. But
yeah, I mean, fair play. I mean, he's not a bad player, and it's weird that we cast him out like that. I mean, it's pretty much all down to Tim Sherwood choosing Nzogbia over him.
And it's weird because Senderos was good at the beginning of last season under Lambert. And then he had an injury problem, and then that was the end of his Villa career.
It is frustrating because Aston Villa seem to be one of these teams. Actually, they seem to be the only example of a team that just kind of kicks players out. I mean, fair play to Senderos. He's wants playing time, and his contract to be cancelled, but he should have never got to that point in the first place. You know, you have to use every player you buy, otherwise there's no point in buying anyone, because if you on the off chance you're not going to use a guy that you spent money on, I mean, whatever his value, if he came in for about 2 million, you'd think 2 million to Aston Villa in this transfer window would be worth a lot more than what they spent 2 million on 2 years ago.
Yeah, at least three times as much.
Exactly. I think Remy Gard is pretty much begging for 2 million at the moment. So, I mean, Senderos Senderos, isn't he? There's no room for him in the Aston Villa team at the moment, but I think he's a better player than Kieran Clarke. He's a stronger body than most some of the central defenders we've got, and I'm not sure why he was not picked to be in the squad.
Yeah, or at least registered in January, maybe.
Yeah, exactly. Like, at least registered. I trust Remy Gard's opinion more than Tim Sherwood's, and Senderos was clearly going anyway. He couldn't be registered, and then we needed a registration space for Ali Sissoko. But yeah, the proof's in the pudding. If he wasn't good enough, then he's not good enough. But it just goes to show that Aston Villa had clearly just been buying people on a whim for quite a while now.
Yeah, I think it's just more evidence of the poor transfer dealings at the club.
Yeah, more. Because one of my favourite stories about Aston Villa is the story of Christian Benteke, because I think it pretty much proves that Villa had no scouting department. Because Alex McLeish wanted to buy him, and then Paul Lambert buys him. So who's the backroom staff there? Is it Alex McLeish suggesting it? Is he watching YouTube videos and going, "Oh, Randy, we need to get this guy"? What's
Yeah, or is it Lerner's kid playing FM and saying this, and finally they cave when Lambert wasn't there?
This shows that Paul Lambert didn't scout a player that he brought in. It was brought on a recommendation of someone else, whether it was a scouting team. But then Tom Fox said there was no scouting department at Aston Villa when he joined. So,
yeah, I think that's a pretty big indictment.
You go on a big list of these players that have been brought in, and can you even remember Karim Alamadi?
Goes back to the same club we bought him for, or like Brett Holman now off in UAE or wherever he is.
But yeah, there's been so many. Senderos is another. Aston Villa have clearly done some work. And it goes the transfer of Fabian Dal from Christian Benteke, bringing in so much money to the club, and nothing being done with it.
Yeah, the money was available to make a splash signing.
Yeah, not necessarily even a splash signing, just someone of worth. I mean, Johan Cabaye was up.
Yeah, I just mean you. I think you have to break the bank at striker if you want guaranteed value.
Yeah, and as we said, Charlie Austin was there. Aston Villa have not made good decisions in the transfer market, and that will have to change instantly. Soon in the summer, they've got to be the best players of the market. Yeah,
and when the money's tight, there's just that much less margin for error. So if you screw it up in the championship, it's amplified that many more times over because you just don't have that budget.
Yeah, every year Aston Villa out of the Premier League is a year that they damn themselves to stagnation. It is scary because if they don't come up in 2 years, those payments get less and less. Then they disappear.
Yeah, then you're just hoping for a crop of players to come through the academy.
Yeah, unfortunately, Aston Villa are built like that. Going back to the AGM, it just seems that Aston Villa actually worked out how to run a football club.
I agree. I think they have the right people in place with Fox and Hollis, although some fans don't share that opinion.
Yeah, I mean, they haven't really had a chance to do anything. One thing I can point out, Tom Fox, is his lack of I don't know how to word this, but when at the start of the season there was going to be a banner like a mass mosaic at Aston Villa saying prepared, and apparently he vetoed that because he didn't think Aston Villa were prepared. And when he was asked about that at the AGM, he didn't deny it. He just said he couldn't remember if he did that or along the lines of that. I think he got the wrong end of the stick about how to run a football club. More attention needed to be paid to the on-pitch performances rather than how the club actually looked.
He wasn't wrong in saying that
he wasn't wrong. But God, that's embarrassing.
Yeah, that is embarrassing.
Having a couple of days off his answers, he did to be saying the right things, and fans got annoyed because it's business talk, and a lot of the older fans, you know, they don't want to hear this business talk. This wasn't a part of the game for them when they watched Aston Villa.
I don't understand why you wouldn't want Villa to become a more of a household name in places like China or even the US or something, because a bunch of people buy a shirt, we can buy a new player.
Exactly, but for them, I guess. For them, I guess.
No, you don't want to be seen as just
£20
coming in the gate every week, but you have to look at the revenue split, and most of the money isn't match day revenue. We're not Arsenal just charging exorbitant amounts for a seat.
Yeah, I mean, exactly.
It is expensive, don't get me wrong, but...
Tom Fox said, basically, the reason we signed with these two QuickBooks and Under Armour is because they represent Aston Villa to their employees. They have pictures, mosaics, you know, newsletters going to their employees, and the Under Armour will, sorry, because they're not signed yet. But Aston Villa will be represented to massive corporations in America through their employees.
And I'm not a huge fan of Under Armour, as, I mean, they have the Spurs contract, that's probably a big part of it, and I don't know, I don't have a problem with Under Armour, I own a few things made by them, but look at who they're signing, now they have Steph Curry and Cam Newton, those are two huge, huge personalities in their sports.
Under Armour are up there with Nike, and Aston Villa will be their second, you know, their marquee. Club. Every inch of the Tottenham kit is designed with a part of history. Every inch of the Tottenham kit tells a story. I didn't realize that until I read about it.
I mean, Macron was nice. I liked the embossed lion on it, but no one knows what Macron is almost anywhere. And
yeah, Macron.
They don't have the advertising budget. You know, I guess.
Macron pay us £50 million over 4 years compared to Arsenal's, I think it's £150 million over 5 years.
Yeah.
Under Armour paying Tottenham for £50 million and we're getting 15. I'm not sure how that represents a success for anyone at Aston Villa Football Club, to be honest. But yeah, I'm looking forward to the future. It does mean will be in the Football League, the Sky Bet Championship. Yeah. But having someone who will represent the history of Aston Villa to, you know, in a wider market makes me proud. Makes me proud that Under Armour have taken Aston Villa on to be their second club to represent, you know. It's not like these things just happen where people are begging for contracts. They have to be worked on.
Yeah, it's not like how we used to actually be paying Nike to make the shirts.
Yeah, and
that's a disaster. And now, I mean, you look at it now, and that's a much better situation.
Yeah, if Tom Fox has persuaded Under Armour to represent us, you know, that is 100% win, regardless of the money that comes in. Because we've got a massive brand in America that holds two flags in the air. One's Tottenham Hotspur and one's Aston Villa. It's a win-win for me.
I think Fox is definitely earning his salary, but
yeah, fingers crossed he continues, and I hope he maybe learns his lesson about interacting with fans. He might not want to be so candid in the future.
Yeah, I think you can always learn from that and improve.
Yeah,
because it's always going to be tough when the club is really struggling like we are right now.
Yeah,
but I guess it's not really a transfer, but Villa did bring in a new assistant manager, Eric Black. He left his job at Rotherham United on Monday to join Remigard's staff.
A lot of people have been taking the piss out of him, basically, because of the clubs he's worked at, but I don't think that's a fair reflection on his actual ability. You know, he's had some high-pressure jobs. He's worked in all areas of football. He's played in France. He was part of Alex Ferguson's amazing Aberdeen team. You know, he's learned from a lot of minds in this game. He's seen a lot of situations. You know, he's not managing Aston Villa. He's assisting Remigard. So anything he brings to the table is going to be of extreme value.
Especially going forward, I think knowledge of the lower leagues and just, I don't know, the landscape there is invaluable, especially for Gard, who hasn't even been to the Premier League before and is still getting used to England.
Yeah, and Eric Black's not exactly a young, not exactly an old guy. No, he's got I think he's 52 and he's got a wealth of coaching and management experience.
Yeah, I think it's a good point in his career. You know, kind of he's still has some energy, but he's been around the block.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people facepalm, but doing the facepalm emoji when we signed him. But I think he's clearly not the best coach out there. But I think it's a great signing for Aston Villa just to bring more experience in. You know, he's the guy who's been around.
Sorry to interrupt, but look at Roy Wilkins. Wilkins had all this experience, top clubs, and he didn't do one thing.
He's just hollow inside. There's nothing. There's nothing in his head. Like, I've seen him analyze. He's like, you know, the vines that go around of Jamie Redknapp analyzing on a Monday Night Football, and it's terrible. Ray Wilkins is like that. Tim Sherwood's like that. They're all of a similar mind where football is run hard and play the ball hard. Like, try as hard
as you can and win.
Run after it.
Be the biggest man and you'll win.
Yeah, and, you know, there are people define my success at a coaching level by the trophies won, and I don't think that's... You know, trophies can be won by luck. Leagues can be won by luck. For me, someone like Steve Bruce is a good manager. Someone like Sam Allardyce is a good manager.
Even Tony Pulis, the flawless record of avoiding relegation. No, you just have to look at the situation.
I hate him.
Well, I do too, but he hasn't been relegated.
Did you hear that he headbutted someone naked in the shower?
That's awesome.
But Tony Pulis is a good manager for what he does. He achieves what he sets out to do. We are so quick to define the success of management by the amount of games you won and win ratios, and clearly that's got nothing to do with it, as we've seen with Tim Sherwood.
Yeah, his Mr. Win ratio is his percentage is in the toilet after last fall, so
yeah, forget him. But yeah, Eric Black is a good appointment. I can't believe Aston Villa was so long without an assistant manager.
Yeah, I think that's just the craziest thing in the whole saga of it.
Yeah, fair play. Apparently Remigard's brought him on out of personal choice. He rejected some higher up candidates that were brought to him. He chooses Eric Black, so full steam ahead.
Yeah, it's good to see that he's been given the freedom to do so from the upper management. They obviously trust him, and at least at this point seems to be a pretty good relationship. They know the board has to know we're going down. Remy knows we're going down, but let's just start trying to figure it out so we can come back up right away.
Yeah, build that infrastructure, get it ready.
All right, with that, let's move on to Twitter questions, and first one from Dean Garbett at Dean Garbay. Why are we so shit? I don't know. Sherwood. We'll just lay it all on Sherwood. Or
yeah. Why are we so shit?
Or because, Paul Faulkner. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it is because our football club didn't realise they had to do things like scout players until this year.
It's
like, even in Football Manager, like I hate to compare a game as simple as Football Manager to this, but it is so simple to scout players, you know, across. I can't believe it. No, why are we so shit? Because we didn't know how to do things. Then we hired Tim Sherwood because we thought people would want him to be a manager, and then that's it.
Yep, simple as that. Next one from F. Wallace at F. Wallace. Will there ever be a boy born that can swim faster than a shark?
I think there has been, and his name is Gabby Abanglahor.
Can Gabby swim?
No, I think he'd drown if he fucking fell in a puddle.
That's why they can't ship him off to France, is he? The club's too poor now, so he's going to have to find his own transport.
I honestly don't think Gabby can do many things, and swimming is not one of those things. I think he just goes on Instagram for 23 hours a day and sleeps.
I heard he's actually quite good at Photoshop, though.
Do you think he types with one finger? Like, really slowly?
No, I could see him being a guy who he just gets behind the computer and is just a totally different person. I think at least it's just funny to think about as someone who's just like, I don't know, like a hacker or something. It's just brilliant. And then
I like to imagine
gets away and they ask him a simple question. He's like, you know, I wasn't paying attention or something, you know.
I like to imagine he's got his reading glasses down his nose in bed reading War and Peace by his poster.
The secret he's intellectual.
So he's so bad at football because he's distracted by the epics, the great American classics when he's playing football.
A Tale of Two Villas.
He's just... God damn it, Gabby.
All right, and from Ellis Sanford, one of our writers at It's Ellis, who would you rather have, Ashley Westwood or Barry Bannon? And in an Aston Villa side, to clarify.
I don't know. I don't think Barry Bannon was ever really a bad player. He certainly had bad spells. But it's another case of Aston Villa letting their youth go without trying to develop them.
Yeah, I think he obviously wasn't a player that could have added much to McLeish's team or even Lambert's team, but maybe now under guard.
Exactly.
He is more of a luxury player, and if we're playing a dominant style in the championship, he could be useful. But yeah, like you were saying earlier in the show, Westwood was really good last week and maybe is finding his feet under guard.
Yeah, exactly. I think that Remy God's paying the sins from ages past. You know, he's got a deal with the fact that he doesn't have Andy Vyman, Barry Bannon, Daniel Johnson, many others that have come through Aston Villa and went.
Yeah, Daniel Johnson leaving for 50k and now.
I will never, ever forget that, I think, as long as I live.
Totally unacceptable.
He's probably, I wouldn't go to say the best, but he would definitely be in the Aston Villa side now.
Yeah, maybe that's a really good tie into our next question from Dean Malarkey at Dean AVFC. The one that got away, which Villa Academy graduate sold or released, is the biggest mistake / loss? You have your choice with Daniel Johnson, Gary Cahill. Would you throw him in there?
Yeah, I'm not sure why Gary Cahill ever went. Maybe there's some behind the scenes stuff. But he only went to Bolton. You've got to think there, what the hell went on.
Yeah.
Daniel Johnson for me, because it is a travesty that they didn't keep him. They literally went, yeah, we accepted a bid for 50 grand a year. You know, it's not like he came to the end of his contract or anything.
It's less money than they pay Charles Nzogbia in 1 week. It's utterly brainless. I think I have to go with Johnson as well, because...
You know, he's...
You're right, he would be playing in the team.
It's a perfect example of someone who's not gifted, but they are... You know, everything about their game is at such a high level, you know, that you can't pick out anything. They're not amazing dribblers, you know, they can't run rings around people like Messi or Ronaldo. But they just play football for 90 minutes, and they play football well for 90 minutes. And, you know, how many teams of people that can play football well for 90 minutes... Aston Villa don't probably have one, maybe. It's smart bun. So, yeah, I mean, it goes back to what Fox said at the AGM, that, you know, we have a sporting director who manages the sporting complex outside the first team. And that's going to go a long way to hopefully getting these youngsters through, because going back to, like, the class of 92 and everything, you know, everyone in England wants to develop next David Beckham, but they're not looking for the Paul Scholes. That's a big mistake.
You know, yeah, you need six or seven players who are really just the glue of your squad, and then if...
Yeah, you need the smart, slow players as much as you need the fast, you know, tricky players.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Daniel Johnson, for me, massive mistake for letting him go. They could have developed him into something special.
I think maybe this is our last one from Tyler Fisher, T Fisher 21. Sherbert or Sorbet?
Come on, you can do your joke, man.
I'm just going to go with Sherwood. I sure would like to have either of them.
Perfect.
So thanks everyone for your Twitter questions. Remember, we'll get to all those. If you send them in, it's kind of my fault for putting out the tweet a bit late today, but anyways, last order of business for today is the FA Cup match. That's against Man City. It's at Villa Park this Saturday at 3 o'clock, just normal match time.
Yeah, this is a match I'm looking forward to, actually. Only chance of saving any hope for us into the series season is a cup run. I mean, if we win it and we get into Europe, we've got to throw it. We can't play European Championship.
No, that's
a disaster.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, why not go for it? Why not?
Exactly. We have to win to continue my plan of going draw, win, draw, win, draw, win for the rest of the year.
Exactly. And Aston, you know, the FA Cup is so underrated as a competition because it is the premier competition in football, that there was nothing before the FA Cup.
And yeah, it's not like winning the League Cup, which is,
everyone will say
Mickey Mouse Cup, whatever.
Yeah, the League Cup.
Those two cups.
Don't get me wrong, if I was in the quarterfinals of that, I'd be going crazy. I'd want to win that every single time. But the FA Cup, there is something so special about it because it's the fact that, you know, there's a team outside my house. There's a stadium, Sutton Coldfield FC, outside my house. And they could potentially get to the third round one day, you know.
Yeah.
Teams like that, so hyper-local to you. Villa's local to me, but there's so many teams in between me and Villa, these little teams that are embedded in everyone's communities. And that's what the FA Cup was always about. It was, you know, first played in a park between, you know, the players from the school, the old boys from the school and the Wanderers, and, you know, it's gone since then. And the fact that we devalue it so much is pretty disgusting, actually, because it is such an important competition, but we let it get rearranged and we play replays, you know, on a Wednesday night when no one watches. I think it needs a bit more of a kick up the arse.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the respect that Wickham gave the match and just everything when they were at Villa.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and
they got it right.
You know, it is annoying to have a replay. It is annoying how everything's done. But that's not down to the competition. That's down to the people who sponsor it and the people who put it on TV. They only select certain matches and then they rearrange matches and they push them out to, you know, terrible timings. But it is an amazing competition and every round to progress is such an honour because, you know, it's not like the Premier League. I don't think that it's any given Sunday in the Premier League, but it really is in the FA Cup for whatever reason.
And if you don't want a replay, don't get held by a team 40 places lower than you on the football league table.
If you don't want a replay, win the game. Simple as.
And if you don't want to be there, just lose because someone wants to be there more than you.
Yeah, but the people we're facing, Manchester City, you know, clearly amazing football team. So much attacking talent and such a wealth. Kevin De Bruyne is injured. Fingers crossed he's not badly hurt, but hopefully he's out for Saturday.
Yeah, it looks pretty bad. I think he's definitely going to be out for Saturday. But
they're in a League Cup final now, so full plaudits to them. They'll be looking to build on that when they take on Villa. And Villa, more importantly, will be looking to build on a massive stream of confidence that's flowing out the squad right now.
Yeah, you got to imagine the mood's pretty good in the dressing room without losing for, a month almost.
Yeah. It's not really a pointless match, is it? I mean, people were saying you may as well throw it when we got Man City, but what's the point? If you throw it against Man City in the Cup, why not just do it in the league as well? You know?
Yeah.
You can't throw a football match. You've got to give it your all in every single football match you're in, especially with Aston Villa. They need so many. It's a shame they can't arrange friendlies midweek like Sunderland and Newcastle, you know, to get this squad properly gelling because it's clear that pre-season didn't work. It actually looks like they've only just come out of pre-season.
Yeah, but it does look like they're starting to build some chemistry now, and you know, you just have to hope you can carry that through to next season.
Yeah. So, what would your predictions be then for this cup match?
I mean, yeah, you have to fancy City, but you got to figure Villa will at least get on the score sheet here at being at home, and it won't be the drab affair we saw against West Brom. It'd be pretty open.
I'd like to think that maybe some luck will go Villa's way. They're tricky in the box and at least a few penalties, you know, not given to them.
Yeah, so, and I mean, you look at Manchester City's central defenders and
they're
not really the best. They're not even two too much higher above the level of Villa.
I mean, yeah, I mean, you could pretty much switch them out for a Corey, one of them for a Corey, and you know, he'd fit in their team perfectly. So for me, I think Aston Villa will get a penalty, and I think it will be 1-1. Go into a replay.
1-1, yeah, give us a replay at that Etihad.
Yeah, the empty had.
Yeah.
It was empty today for a semi-final, you know. There's loads of empty seats, and I was just like, fucking hell. That's bad.
Yeah, maybe the next round they'll have Chelsea and it will be El Plastico. But, yeah, like you're saying, they had to play Everton today. They got through 3-1, won that. So maybe a bit of tired legs. I don't know. I'm going to say Villa 2-1.
I'll go for it, man.
Why not?
But yeah, you know, this match is up for grabs. Aston Villa look more of a cohesive unit than Manchester City. Manchester City have so much weight chucked into attacking, you know. And I've got a figure going on layman's terms here. That's got to leave something open at the back.
Yeah, they just don't really prioritize defending. And if Yaya Toure is too old to be an attacking mid, he's still going to be on the pitch. And if that's a defensive mid, you know, he could be caught up the pitch.
Scary player. But yeah.
Yeah, he absolutely ran us last year.
If Aston Villa keep a structure, they can win this match. It isn't outside the realms to win this match. Villa have always had a bit of good fortune against City. You know, we haven't exactly been battered by them in every single match. It's not like Arsenal or Man United. We always seem to get a good result against City.
Yeah, and like you're saying about the, if the team can keep some structure, I think the midfield's really starting to come together.
Becoming one
of the stronger parts of the team.
Yeah, Football Manager, time to be more disciplined, I think. What is it? Be less expressive.
Stick to your positions.
Stick to your positions. But yeah, no, if Villa play the game we know they're capable of playing, if they play like they're doing against Leicester, I can see them winning. I have to go for a 1-1. That seems like a more realistic result.
Yeah, I think just building off the Leicester match, and even in addition to the West Brom match, is important, but played so well against Leicester that you have to think it's going to start to get better.
Yeah, exactly. As I said, Villa need to win this match because they can't afford another loss, another confidence-rocking loss. They've got to carry a streak as far as it will take them.
Yeah, right. Right when you're getting on a bit of an upturn, you can't afford to let it slip.
No. And I think it'll be much to Remy God's dismay if he were to play a team of youngsters.
There's no use in that. Not now. Save that for April.
I think he would have killed the season. Well, not him necessarily, but he would have killed the season there and then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's about time to kill off this podcast as we're about wrapped up. Remember, we're on iTunes, Stitcher, Blog Talk Radio, Google Play. Sorry, no YouTube this week, but maybe we'll be back in the future. We're trying to get a better recording to improve the audio quality of the pod. So thank you for sticking with us as we go through that. Remember, the game's at 3 GMT on Saturday, 10 Eastern, and we'll have all the coverage for you at 7500tohold.com and on Twitter and Facebook, as always. So thanks for joining us, James.
No problem. Thank you very much for having me again.
Yeah, we'll have you back probably sometime soon. So,
of course.
For James Rushton, I've been Jack Grimsey. Thanks for listening to The Holdcast.